SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, too. And yesterday's Mardi Gras festivities. Absolutely fabulous. The king cake. You could probably hear the excitement. And you might have seen the pictures. I had to wait until Tina got home. And thanks again to Ben Bacek, who sent us one that, this was the real thing. I mean, this is coming, coming straight from New Orleans. And we were able to enjoy the racing from Fairgrounds and the Mardi Gras steak, where a familiar name and familiar family, certainly for Fairgrounds and for Churchill Downs denizens, the Kleins, play on. $10. $10. I'm going to talk with Sid. I mean, it's not the focus today, but I do want to ask Sid, because this came up with Andy yesterday, that little conversation about friend or foe. Country Day, the Klein family stallion that, stands and is available to anybody. It's not a private situation like friend or foe with the Bromans. You can get to Country Day and he seems to get, from a small base, he seems to be getting his share of winners. And, this filly, as well as, the one that could have run as well, Break Even, second in the Prioress, winner of the Eight Bells last year, also Country Day. And they both dropped in Kentucky, but, there's Louisiana bred Country Days out there. It's a kind of a cool story. It feels like he's a Spitestown son. So it's pretty amazing. And of course the Kleins are just getting it done with their own family mares as well. So anyway, Country Day and Play On in a terrific battle with Hotshot Anna, who righted the ship after a difficult circumstance in the Menard. So, Eye in the Sky for Cassie and Barber, third. So, pretty formful. Unbridled Class actually went favored in here. And I thought that was a bit of a surprise. The Bernie Flint mare that won the Menard. 4-1 on Play On was a nice number, and pretty much everybody that you would have thought could win on Mardi Gras won, and that included Amos, and I'm sure you saw the picture of Tom and Colleen Amos Tom has gone he's gone to the Washington, D.C. well, maybe once too often, but it's still entertaining if you didn't see it. So Amos with a winner and Steve Margolis, who continues to have a terrific resurgence, and very happy for Margolis. Another winner for the Lowe's. This one, another of their homebreds, a Curlin filly. Zerlin breaks her maiden, going a mile and a 16th. field of five in here. There's a four-year-old, and you know, being a Curlin and being a homebred of the Lowe's, out of the nice Zapper Bell. It took her a long time to break her maiden. This was her 12th start, and they've shown patience. They dipped her in for 75 one time, but they kept persevering, and she gets it a diploma yesterday. Also, race driver for Cassie and Oxley. This a distorted humor colt. This came in the first or the second, I think. Was it the second? Was that that was the allowance. There we go. There was a couple of early maiden races, but this was an allowance, turf sprinting. And I thought there was one more maiden race that I thought I had printed in advance of this card. I can't. Maybe not. Maybe the Lowe Margolis winner. I will mention Connor Murphy, who I think does a good job, and E-Mouse at 5-1 in the sixth race to start the pick four. And I had printed the pick four and just didn't get a chance to write it up. But E-Mouse was certainly playable, usable, and wins well. Wins under Channing Hill. This is an import, last seen at Churchill in the River City. 6-year-old now, and certainly kept good company last year. Tried the Woodbine Mile. A couple different trips up to Woodbine. An Invincible Spirit, 6-year-old. Was very solid and consistent last year. So we'll have to see. We'll see if he tries him in the Louisiana Derby Day undercard action. So a very fun, looked like a very fun day at Fairgrounds yesterday. And I'm sure the frivolity partying went on into the evening. Casey asking me an important question about the king cake. The king cake is delicious. It is delicious. It basically was is our first king cake. I've seen them, you know, in the Northeast. In fact, on our way, we saw my dad on Sunday. We brought him, got them that thing I told you about with Tina had sent me or got me for Valentine's Day, the Pickstar, it's called. It, you know, it's like an iPad, like the size of a laptop, and it's a picture frame and video. You know, you send photographs. It's really cool. For us, it's going to be great because the kids can send the baby pictures. But it occurred to me to get one for my father. And so we ordered one for my dad, and we took it to him on Sunday. But the king cake question about how it tastes. Whenever we see my father, we stop at Bella Napoli and get him biscotti in Troy, and they had king cake out. They had a king cake, and I didn't look closely to see if they, you know, had, you know, came in frozen and they just defrosted, or if they made it. I couldn't tell. It was packaged though, kind of similar to the packaging, and this came from Gambino's in New Orleans. There's also Gambino's in Baton Rouge, but it's basically a coffee cake, or even closer to a Danish consistency, the dough, you know, to a golden, you know, to what the bakery would refer to as a golden dough. And then it's been rolled and it's got filling. This filling was pecan praline. And It was good. I mean, the side. In fact, on the side, I didn't realize that the king cake had all these different flavored fillings. There's a cream cheese. There's a strawberry cream cheese, etc. And this filling, at first I was like, I don't know, pecan praline. I don't know if I'm, but it was. But it's very good. We have not found the baby yet. Tina and I, we may have eaten about, I don't know, maybe about 20% at the most. And we haven't found the baby. I think I know where the baby is. I got this sort of a pudgy end, and I got a feeling that the baby was placed in there. That's my guess. So later when she comes home, we have coffee after school. Maybe we'll cut over on that section and see which of us is going to have the good luck for the year finding the baby. Anyway, I was very tickled by the whole experience, the whole king cake experience. So thanks again to Ben. Quite a few things non Mardi Gras related from yesterday, and I want to slip in. If you aren't following Full Patrol, it's what, the third year. It's a lot of fun, and it's a great. I'm going to think that it's a good way to get kids involved in the game as well. FullPatrol.com, you know, from the Hall of Fame, Brian Bouye and the team. And yesterday, Magical World, the Three Chimneys mare, she dropped her Gunrunner baby, and lots of excitement. Mare and foal are terrific, and Magical World delivered a colt. I just earlier checked the video stream. It's live video streams into the stalls or into the paddocks of about five or six different mares. And now here, okay, good. Magical World, the video feed earlier was of an empty stall, and now there's a video feed of the mare and her baby out in a round pen. And it's fabulous. Oh, my God, it's fabulous. Look at that. That's amazing. The whole thing is amazing that within hours, the babies are up and doing funny things. And he is out there with Magical World. It looks like it's raining, actually, in Lexington and environs. Oh, he's jumping. Oh, my God. You got this is ridiculous. This will occupy you if forget any productivity in your office if you put this on. But anyway, there's all kinds of there's a couple of other mares, including New Money Honey. Those of you that are fans of Bob Edwards, wonderful race mare and filly, of course. She's overdue. She was due on the 21st, so she should drop any day. And Ashado is due. She's also a couple of days late. So Ashado and New Money Honey are both going to produce their progeny. New Money Honey was out in the paddock earlier this morning. And we'll check on Ashado. But FullPatrol.com, if you've got kids, they're just showing the field, Ashado's paddock. So keep tabs. It's just terrific. Just a terrific concept that has really taken root. There's also Vaucluse at Gainesway. There's Alpine Sky up here at Old Tavern Farm in New York. They're due in March and April. And Emotional Kitten at Denali is also due in late April. So there's still five more foals to drop. But the first one, Magical World, with a pretty adorable Gunrunner colt out there in the paddock. Speaking of paddocks and speaking of green space, you may have seen, before we get to the Pennsylvania and Maryland news, Niren yesterday announced that they're eliminating that paddock tent. And, you know, that tent, it never was supposed to be permanent. I remember when they put it up, it was 1 year when Fasig Tipton created that partnership. and there was that, you know, the Fasig Tipton Festival of Racing around the sale. And that they put that tent up, and I never expected it to last 10 years, but it's been there 10 years, or at least 10 years. And, you know, it's at its busiest, you know, on big Saturdays, but it's really kind of a big clunky thing. And people are going to be thrilled to have that section opened again for people to sit and be able to, you know, watch horses coming into the paddock, and especially on the walkway heading out to the track. It's a good spot. I know people are annoyed by the TV tent, but you know, you can understand why the TV tent is there. There's one of those tents at virtually every major, you know, around every major racetrack paddock, close enough, close by. So that tent, it's a little less obtrusive, and it's a smaller, seems like it's a smaller spot, but the paddock tent is no more. So I think people, from what I can tell, people were excited by that news. Exciting news out of Maryland yesterday, and the joint committee hearings for the Pimlico Laurel projects were conducted yesterday, and they could not have gone more swimmingly. Virtually no objection from anybody in the House of Delegates or in the Senate in Annapolis. And, you know, considering that the House of Delegates Speaker, Adrienne Jones, you know, she's a sponsor, and so is Senate President Bill Ferguson. I think that pretty much says it all. And the most involved situation yet to be figured out is what's going to happen to Bowie. And there's that space apparently is going to be maybe used for athletic fields for the state, you know, for Bowie State, and that kind of there's some details involving what's going to happen up there. But other than that, this is going to happen. And it is Craig Fravel was on hand yesterday for the Stronach group, and he termed it a miracle. It's the Belvedere Avenue miracle is right. It's unbelievable that this is happening. And I could have reached out for Alan Foreman, but I'll just say, you know, you've heard Alan repeatedly as this has come to life. Alan Foreman is the linchpin to this happening. And his dedication to Maryland racing and the, you know, the long-term health of the sport in Maryland is just, I mean, second to none. There's not enough praise that can be directed toward Alan in making this happen. The working between all these parties, you know, first smoothing over things between the city of Baltimore and the Stronach group, and, you know, then gaining support in Annapolis, you know, on and on in this. We talked about the Donald Schaefer stakes. There'll be an Alan Foreman stake, because what he's done here, this will really be, you know, part of his legacy long after you know, all of us are gone, and racing continues in Maryland. Alan's work will be hailed as instrumental. Amazing. Can't tell you how exciting to me this is. In Pennsylvania, they're having the budget hearings, and everybody that counts in Harrisburg has lined up against the governor's proposed incursion into the Racing Development Trust. So that, as we've discussed here, whether it was with Brian Sanfratello or Tommy Thompson, Andy Simoff, yeah, that is going nowhere. And so, you know, those that were concerned about their mayors in Pennsylvania, this should fade into the ether quickly enough. So, and applaud everybody that responded appropriately. Speaking of responding and helping and doing the right thing, there's been continued support of the GoFundMes for Megan Fadlovich and Cody Davidson. Megan transported to Illinois to continue her recovery. If you didn't see yesterday, she wrote a Facebook message that is just so touching and really special, thanking everybody involved and really just openly discussing her emotions involved with the accident and losing Cody Davidson and having to go on and continue her career in his honor and memory. And the money being raised for Cody's children, it's over 11,000 now. And don't, if you haven't, if you thought you were going to give, you know, please contribute. I'll send links again to the updates. Pete Fornatel is going to join us. Dr. Allday is back from the Bahamas, wherever the hell he was, the Virgin Islands diving. Sid Fernando, Bill Harrigan, lots of AP Indy, Johnny D, and Seth Merrow. Fun Wednesday starting now.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
What career track are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Races. Waiting on Pete. I'll give you an update. Of course, it's draw day at all the ovals, really, around the country. And the changes and adjustments to your Fountain of Youth field continued yesterday as green light go. Spike the fever. So Jimmy Jerkins had to back off. So we'll see how Jimmy regroups. Maybe, who knows? Maybe I don't know if Jimmy would go across to Tampa. I don't know if he's the kind of horse you just you send to Tampa so quickly. But we'll see what happens there. So right now, a field of eight anticipated, and I can give it to you alphabetically because I've got the nomination PPs. I don't know why it took me so long to think of this. It's pretty ridiculous. All the years of having a printer at the ready and of, looking at nominations, whether it's nomination lists or nomination PPs, it never occurred to me to buy legal paper. you'd always go to print with letter size, 8.5 by 11, and it doesn't work. So at some point, in the last 6 months, I bought a pack of 500 count legal paper, and so now when I want to print out the nominations, and racetracks around the country, it's done on legal paper, and. So now you change the setting in your printer, and the next thing you know, you got, it's like you're in the racing office. it only took 15 years to figure this out. As seen on TV, Kelly Breen and Chance It, and of course we opined for the Mucho Macho Man where those two were, but as it just turned out, Kelly Breen and Safi Joseph both waited rather than participate in the Holy Bull. So they both turn up here after running 1-2 in the Mucho. And Dennis's Moment, of course, the headliner, Ete Indien, out of the Holy Bull, the good second behind Tis the Law. And imagine that the B and Cone trainee will get lots of support. gear jockey Rusty Arnold for Calumet, and it just, it's a little surprising to me. Rusty doesn't strike me as, you know, running maidens often, but in stake spots, but gear jockey, you know, who participated, you'll recall, in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, out of a good try in the Bourbon, and of course was third at 1,000,000 to 1 in the Breeders' Cup. He's running, as is Shotsky, of course, coming down for Jerry O'Dwyer, and the other maiden, Luch, with the Falcon, a Union Rags colt that Anthony Quartarolo will send out. So there's your field of the anticipated field of eight, unless somebody jumps in. Structor is waiting for something else, and all the Todd Pletchers that had maybe, you know, been slightly considered, they are all waiting for other opportunities. Okay, so there's your eight that when they open the entry box, unless anybody else jumps in at the quarter pole. Pete Fornatale jumping in at the quarter pole as it happens. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be back with you here.
And it sounds like you're out and about in Brooklyn.
No, I'm in the bunker. Does it sound funny? I'm in the home office. It should be sounding okay. There's some radiator noises though. never gets too quiet down here. It's kind of funny. I've spent all this money on sound equipment, and then you just hear the pipes banging in the background. I maybe should have thought this through a little bit more.
Well, all right. As long as you don't have Perrin, you know, chained to the radiator.
She will not be in our face today. She is on. This makes me envious of her school experience as opposed to mine. They're doing a field trip today to the Museum of Modern Art. And I realized how badly I dropped the ball on not volunteering to chaperone for this one. I did go into class last week, and they're doing this Can You Imagine unit, where they're talking about different forms of storytelling and media. So I did a whole little presentation about radio and actually had the 7-year-olds record a little bit for the show that I'm going to use today. So that was a lot of fun. But, yeah, so today she's looking at Warhol and Van Gogh, and very far from the radiator.
Well, we're just kidding, of course. I don't know why I even thought of that. Although I think I saw something. I think I was watching something and radiator the radiator. Oh, I you know what it was? We watched it. Tina and I watched that move, that Instant Family, with Marky Mark. What's his name? I'm going to forget who the wife is. And they're adopting kids, and there's a chain to the radiator reference. That must be why it was in my head. It's actually a very sweet little picture, as it happens. We watched a double feature last night. Peggy Sue Got Married was on, which is one of my absolute favorites of Coppola's.
I haven't seen it since the day, but I remember really enjoying it. Fabulous. It holds up well.
Oh my God, it's fabulous. Yeah, it's timeless, actually. It's and Kathleen Turner actually looked it up. She lost the Oscar to Marley Matlin, so I guess I can understand that, Children of a Lesser God, but Kathleen Turner was just unbelievable in it, and it was in that period when Kathleen Turner, you know, she was box office gold. I mean, you couldn't.
She had a phenomenal run. I remember seeing her on Broadway in that era in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Yep.
She was amazing. I just missed her the other day. Speaking of podcasting and podcasting studios, occasionally I get kicked out. If Susan has something going on in the basement space here, I get kicked out of my own studio, and I have to go to the Brooklyn podcasting studio, which is fortunately basically a stone's throw just down the block. And I had just missed that Kathleen Turner was recording. The guy down there, the engineer Josh, records all kinds of cool shows. And I had just missed Kathleen Turner was like in the studio right before me, and I was upset to get the chance to to miss the chance to meet her because she's done so much great work over the years, including that brilliant against type run a few years back on Californication, if you remember that.
I watched kind of casually. I didn't latch on. That's probably because I love him though.
Deeply flawed show, but some of those guest runs were unbelievable, and hers was particularly memorable.
Well, if you haven't, it seems like it's making a cable. Peggy Sue Got Married, making a cable. It's funny how certain things pop up and they'll last for, you know, like 3 weeks. And they'll be played, you know, a handful of times. But it's terrific. Nick Cage is in it, you know, and he's good. But there's a lot of good character actors sprinkled around. Jim Carrey, a young Jim Carrey, Joan Allen, who doesn't age. She's like a plastic flower. It's unbelievable. I mean, Joan Allen has looked the same for 30 years. It's crazy. It's very strange.
There are people who are like that. It's a gift many have. Some would put you in that category.
All right, I'll accept that. I'll use that as the. Well, speaking of aging, the Macedonian George Hamilton, Tommy Massis, it's his birthday, so we'll send out a
fantastic. They'll be partying in Florida tonight. They'll hopefully be able to get a little extra sunshine. One of our favorite figures. That was a great. It was a really fun appearance. One of so many at the NHC, but I thought he was. He's always good, but he was particularly memorable, I thought. And just be careful, because his Twitter comments are often not safe for work, people.
They're not safe for anything, for any intelligentsia. It's a minefield. Speaking of minefields and the contest, we'll come back to the Saturday Santa Anita and Express Bet contest results in a minute, but exactly what everybody expected, Pete, is happening with the release of all the plays from the NHC and to the request of a few different deep divers, as I refer to them, the files very accessible and usable and. People are going to town, including your man, Tony Joe.
Yes, and Tony, a few people in particular deserve a lot of credit for not only getting these files out, but also putting them together in a viewable way. And Holly Short at the NTRA definitely deserves props. Tony, you mentioned. Also, my man, John Camardo, our in-the-money data geek, has had a lot to do with it. And it's just been fascinating. And it actually made me I wish this level of detail had gone into the analysis of the Breeders' Cup plays, but I don't know. It must be that middle step that they made the data so much more processable that we're now able to have all these people, including Stu Slagle over on the In the Money podcast blog, and then a bunch of different people going nuts on Twitter. If you don't follow Tony Joe, or you should, at ZHOUTONY. He's been crushing it there. Chris Larmy has had a bunch of really interesting threads. He's Derby 1592. And it's been really interesting to try to see what different ideas people are coming up with. And it's proved so far, I've just been happy to see a lot of hypotheses things that we've always imagined just to actually have the data say, yes, that is the way it works. People really do tend to play what they like until a certain point where they start reaching. And when you look in the mandatory races, one of the things that's been really fun is to go through the mandatory races and be able to precisely quantify what price a horse is within the little ecosystem of a contest versus the price on the tote board. And it's kind of interesting to see, you know, to my mind, how underrepresented certain favorites are and how certain long shots, especially as the contest gets on and people have a sense of really where they are, how you'll have horses that are 20 to 1 on the board that are more like 5 to 1 in the room. And It's going to be an evolutionary process of which we're in the first stage, where lots of interesting conclusions and strategies for next year are going to be formed. I think the first idea out of the gate, and Tony wrote a piece on my blog about this, was the idea of how he believes it's your optimal strategy really is to reach at the long end of the odd spectrum. It's my theory, and hopefully we're going to have enough data from other years to do some work on my theory, but that, you know, yes, I do believe there is an outsized reward, of course, to getting those longer prices. But I think the way that this year played out, with not only those two mandatories producing such big prices, but also just an array of prices in optionals late on day two, that it's exaggerated the importance of. I think there are people there who are only going to play 20-1 and higher. And I think there are other years, and, you know, look no further than 2019 as an example, where the prices stay below the stratosphere, where you still can play what you like and reach for lower prices. So it's always going to be dependent on what results happen on the racetrack, of course. But I'm interested to see what kind of conclusions are drawn and what people do. I feel like right now you've got a lot of people who are just going to bomb, bomb, bomb next year. And then if it's a little bit more logical, like it was in 2019, you might see people who employed strategies more like Scott Coles, more like Matt Van Volge, who ended up running first and third that year, who get the job done. It's so much fun, and I really appreciate the work that the NTRA and the Players Committee and Chris Larmy did in getting this information out there, because I just think you can't help but learn something when you look into these plays. So I would say for people to check out those Twitter threads. And then there's a few articles right now up on InTheMoneyPodcast.com, and there's going to be more. And I may even try to do a special show bringing in Tony and Chris and Stu Slagle and just go through and talk to them about they'll be the ones, having done all that deep dive, as you said, Steve, they'll be people that I'd love to see what their just top-level conclusions are. And again, I just think you're not going to be able to help but learn something about contest play and the NHC specifically as a result of the NTRA leasing the place.
Well, and I'm going to have a visit from Paul Matisse, and there's a couple of topics for Paul. I want him to talk about, you know, what he thinks is, you know, usable and what is translatable, both for contest play going forward, NHC for next year, for day to day. I mean, you know, what's in there that, you know, that really, you know, what's wheat, what's chafe. And then of course we also got to talk about, and I haven't discussed it yet, you know, you got this new late double concept, from Santa Anita and Golden Gate, and, you know, the high denomination bet. This is something that Paul and various player committees, have discussed, with Breeders' Cup, for instance. And so I want Paul to talk about that as well. And in fact, Steve Haskin is down with a little bit of a bug, so I think Paul ideally tomorrow at 10:30 to discuss those topics and more.
Set your alarms, people. Yeah. Anytime Paul Matisse is on with Steve, you get such great stuff out of Paul, and Paul's always such a great interview, and that's going to be must listen. And if I don't catch it live, I might be recording myself, but there's always stevebick.com to check out the archive. I mean, obviously, everybody, I listen regularly, but Paul in particular, and on those topics, I'd love to hear what he thinks about this new golden hour pick, which I think its chief advantage, Steve, is going to be, it's going to be like a great get-out play. And I think it's going to do well as a result of that. As you know, obviously there's night racing out there too, but for a lot of people, those races represent the end of the simulcast day. And having another double that starts later than the previous last late double, I think that could lead to some success potentially. But I'd love to hear what he has to say about that and the NHC and really all kinds of issues in racing, because I think a lot of people don't realize about Paul is not only does he understand the business from a gambling side, but he also understands it from the owning and breeding side. So, you know, those are some pretty important perspectives to have. And when you've got somebody who's a genius who has experience in all of them, talk about you can't help but learn something. That's going to be great stuff.
Well, he was really the first to vocalize the you know, the increased denomination concept. You know, we've had this very steady progression toward the lower denominations, which in a lot of cases, I mean, specifically the easiest, you know, test case to focus was what happened in the superfecta pools when they went from a dollar to 10 cents. The small player, you know, really enjoyed, you know, having a way to play supers. But the people that had been, you know, dedicated $1 superfecta, you know, ticket builders, they felt disenfranchised, and that's why the Super High Five was created. And that came from a player focus group, you know, basically saying, you know, you in trying to placate or reach out to the masses, you disenfranchise a group of very dedicated players here. And, you know, this is a debate that also goes on with the, you know, the changeover from $2 pick sixes to, you know, the frustrating the jackpot
something
bets.
Is gained and something is lost in these situations.
Yes.
And these new bets have a chance to get back some of what was lost. I mean, on one hand, I get the lower minimums completely. At the time, I was a huge proponent of them, thinking they'd be a great equalizer for the little guy. What I was not anticipating, and what I think did disenfranchise a lot of people, is with the lower denomination came people playing these bets much more efficiently, and as a result, driving down the overall payout, and what these things, you know, players perceive they should pay got lower and lower, and that's what led to that disenfranchisement. And I do acknowledge now that was a law of unintended consequences thing that is very real. So if there's ways to come up with new wagers that can recapture some of the magic of those old bets, I'm all for it. I'm not sure if the double is the right pool for that, but that's a down the rabbit hole conversation for another time. But I'll also say, Steve, that in all my time, you know, not that long, but my couple of decades following racing seriously, I came to it late. I came to it in my 20s. Some of the best opportunities I've seen have come with new bets. There's like this fun adjustment period before the world sort of figures it out and it gets very efficient, where you can be really rewarded for creative thinking and good handicapping and good bet structure before it all becomes sort of rote. New bets provide great opportunities, so I'm very much in favor of innovation. And if I have specific quibbles about something new, I try to keep an open mind. And, you know, we'll let the market and we'll let the specifics of what plays out in the real world determine if they're going to work or not. But any new bet that Paul was in favor of, that would be enough for me to just throw my support behind it.
Well, and I didn't get a chance yesterday to bring it up with Andy Serling, but I'll mention it here. For instance, you know, one of the things that Naira has been just amazed by is, you know, the quick conversion to the jackpot Empire Six concept. And, you know, they, even though the thing was wiped out on Saturday, it was hit on Saturday for 100 and whatever, 140,000 or 160,000. And the next day, you know, they've already announced these biweekly force outs.
Yeah, I love that. I love the biweekly force out. You know, one of the big criticisms of that bet from the beginning has been how it ties up money and that some of the financial gain in the bet is illusory, because when you're tying up money for an unspecified period of time, that's money that's not being churned. Paying it out on a regular basis is a really good idea to me, especially if they can, if the market can show, and if there are maybe some other ways to stimulate growing the carryover fast enough. Look, I mean, I know a lot of horse players detest these bets. I'm doing some research on it now, writing a piece. And when I sat down to write this piece, Steve, I wanted to write about the evils of jackpot pick sixes. I'm not kidding. Like, that's, I wanted to write something anti. And when you look at the data, the case against them isn't as strong as I wanted it to be. And the business for the tracks is so good that I've changed my focus in this piece I'm working on. And I really want to make it more along the lines of, okay, these jackpot bets are here to stay, and here's how we can make them better. And one of the policy recommendations John Camardo and I came up with before it was announced was the idea of these these intermittent, these every other week force outs. So I'm thrilled to see it. I think there's some further tweaks that can be made to hopefully make these bets more horse player friendly. But, yeah, I mean, Andy has been a vocal critic, and I mean, but I'm sure he's very happy about that development.
Well, no, there's a broader aspect to this that they were surprised on Sunday that anybody had to be surprised. The thing handled over $400,000, despite the fact. Yeah, I mean, despite the fact that it just got hit. And
it's amazing.
There's a lesson in here in terms of the computer batch betting and the computer assisted wagering, which is playing into these pots. And conversely, the opportunity for players on that late pick five that New York has, where the computer groups are excluded, and it's a very advantageous circumstance for players that don't have to bump heads with the groups. And there's a lot. Boy, it's a complex. I mean, you kind of hinted at it. I mean, there's a lot of complexity to these discussions, and there is no certainty that forcing out every 2 weeks is ideal either. I mean, there's the school of thought that says, okay, the meet is going to end, in April. You're not far away from it. Do you have to do it every 2 weeks? Is it better off maybe once a month, so that you get, a bigger, bigger pots? There's a million moving parts to the discussions. Let's fold in the moving parts to Saturday's action, which included Santa Anita contest play and online at ExpressBet. And I was watching for a period of time. I was watching the leaderboard. Then I got distracted, and that was it. And then I looked at the end, and I saw that Christy Moore had won.
Oh, I'm looking at a different result here. Oh, I see, man. What I'm doing. No, you are correct. You have the right leaderboard. I had pulled up the wrong one. I had pulled up 2019. That wouldn't have been that interesting to go over, would it? Christy Moore, though, a name we saw, throughout last year, and I had the pleasure of interviewing for the NHC preview show. Really a very, very interesting player, and somebody who is so funny. She's a very rare, rare item, somebody who I pursued to interview and seemed like super reluctant, and then was unbelievable. It was like a complete natural, like she'd done radio, her whole life. So somebody I definitely want to get back on. I didn't see that she got the job done. So that'll be an ultimate betting challenge seat and another NHC, I believe. So I wonder, somebody who ran third tour last year, if she'll start thinking NHC tour. It'd be fantastic to see her make a deep run. She's just a great. It's so great to have somebody. She's so studious in her handicapping, and somebody who came to it rather recently. I don't think was a player even 5 years ago. So to be able to talk, that one of the things I really enjoy talking to her about was what we can do to attract newer players to make the game more accessible, and also, of course, what we can do to attract more female players. And she was very articulate in our interview about both of those things. So that's great to see her name up there.
Well, and we'll talk to Johnny, actually. Johnny couldn't get to visit with Johnny D yesterday. Johnny's going to join us in hour three, and they're winding down as well at the last week of Beat the Host, so last chance. So we'll talk those results as well, and the Saturday contest. Pete, let me jump because I've got to get Dr. Alday in here while I've got a window. And we'll catch up next week.
Do it to it. Folks can find all those results over on the ExpressBet website. I'll go ahead and tweet out the full leaderboard from that Santa Anita contest, and we will catch up soon, Steve.
Excellent. Pete Fornatel, everybody in the money. player podcast, and much, much more. We'll take a quick break, and it's almost the top of the hour, so we're a little behind already here, and Dr. Alday is going to join us. I want Steve to talk about what was referenced yesterday with Neil Drysdale, and Steve was instrumental in addressing the hoof issues when they came about. With AP Indy, and you've heard Steve reference AP Indy many times over the years, and with his passing this weekend, a chance to kind of go back to, you know, those moments that helped produce his terrific Hall of Fame career. AP Indy's, if they had a Hall of Fame for veterinarians, Steve would be in it. We'll take the top of the hour, and then we'll come back and talk as well to Sid Fernando. Sid's going to talk about AP Indy's legacy in the breeding shed. And Bill Harrigan, also referenced yesterday when I asked Neil about AP as a young horse. And it was Harrigan who still does the same thing. Gets young horses, gets them started. For some for clients and some for himself, that he, you know, he'll sell privately or he'll race them, get them their career started and then sell them. Bill Harrigan is respected, a horseman that you might not know about as there is in the game. Back after this, Dr. Stephen Alday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
ExpressBet's popular and profitable $50,000 Beat the Host competition is back in 2020, and this is your chance to win big. Merely place a live $5 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. If your earnings top the host total, you win. Register once and compete Saturdays in January and February for a healthy $2,000 in weekly prizes with no takeout, break, or skim. Beat the Host just once to qualify for the $10,000 championship round. New this year, Beat the Host features a challenging and fun cumulative season-long earnings competition with over $20,000 in prizes paid to the top 10 finishers. Whip hosts in all 8 weeks to earn a share of a sweet $3,000 Sweep the Host bonus. Don't delay. Register today for Beat the Host free at ExpressBet.com.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.